the difference between a leader that is good and a leader that is great is really only one thing, which is whether that person really cares about you and your development.
What is the best advice you have ever received?
Take the road less traveled.
Hello, dear leader. A warm welcome to today's Lightwolf podcast. Today, I have the huge pleasure to talk to a very successful, internationally experienced executive. I'm speaking to Walter Geiger, CEO, board chairman, and private equity senior advisor. Dear Walter, a warm welcome to the Lightwolf podcast.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Now, before his current roles, Walter had an impressive global corporate career. He was first a marketing director, then president and general manager at Procter & Gamble. In that company, Walter held positions in Austria, Germany, Switzerland, Indonesia, Singapore, Kobe, Japan, Cincinnati in the United States. Walter then served as regional vice president for Eastern Europe and Central Asia for Johnson & Johnson in Moscow. And after that, as president of global consumer business at Galderma, where Walter played a decisive role in tripling the company's value, which led to a very successful IPO. So you can see this is someone who has a lot of global leadership experience. In his private life, Walter is an excellent skier. You will always see him from behind and enjoys spending quality time with his wife, Ingrid, his daughter, Lara, and his son, Lukas. Walter, you have held influential leadership positions for more than 30 years. I am just delighted that you are going to share your experience and your expertise here with the Lightwolf community. My first question, you've had an impressive career. From our years of working together, I know that success, people, and good leadership matter to you. Maybe it seems obvious, but the people on the call, like me, are interested in understanding why is good leadership so important to you, Walter?
Well, first of all, Stefan, thank you for having me. It's an honor. Second, in terms of good leadership, I think good leadership matters because it helps to improve the societies we live in. And really, this applies to every country, every culture I've ever worked and lived in. There is this term of smell of the place. And we've all worked for organizations where the smell of the place wasn't great. And we've all worked for organizations where the smell of the place was great. There was once a INSEAD professor, Goshal, who basically compared the smell of a place of a company to his native Calcutta in summer versus, Fontainebleau or INSEAD, where he was teaching in springtime. And we all can feel what difference this makes, right? As a leader, if you can get the smell of the place a little bit closer to springtime in France, I think this makes a big difference. And second, the biggest problems of mankind require better leadership, right? Climate change, conflicts, social injustice. Great leadership makes a big difference.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I love the smell of the place analogy. And you're right, it makes a huge difference. When you think back, Walter, do you remember the moment or a moment when you suddenly got aware of the power of leadership?
Good question. I had the pleasure of working in Procter & Gamble as my, what I call, academy alma mater or academy company. And I had the pleasure of really working for really an exceptional bench of strong leaders, leaders like ahead of me and next to me. And it was also below me, right? So I think great leadership at every level. And I think I realized a big difference in the leadership that was directly above me. I went from a not-so-good leader to a great leader. And it made a huge difference in my own personal development.
This is a terrific example. Do you still remember any mindset or behavior that this great leader you had afterwards displayed that helped you grow so much?
I think the difference between a leader that is good and a leader that is great is really only one thing, which is whether that person really cares about you and your development. And the greatest leaders that were not only managers and, you know, made sure that I did the right things at work and we achieved the right objectives at work, but that person had a personal interest in helping me and making me stronger in the situation I was in.
Yeah, agree. And there are different definitions, different perceptions of what good leadership is. Yeah? It's a complex topic and it's a very personal topic. What does good leadership mean to you if you were to define it in a few words?
My favorite definition of leadership is the five E's. First, it's easy to remember, but second, it's also working for me. So the five E's of leadership, in my view, are envision. So you need to be clear on where the organization needs to go. You know, need to engage the people in that vision, clear priority setting, meeting drumbeat. You need to energize them, town halls, making sure that it's communicated well. You have to enable them, potentially through trainings or courses, coaching, day-to-day coaching. And then at the end, you really have to focus on execution and make sure there's a clear action plan and the action plan is followed through. That concept sounds very simple, but I can tell you in my work now in private equity, I have really developed a playbook around it. And everywhere I go, that playbook is working.
That's amazing. Let's move to that topic, Walter, private equity. In introducing you, I enumerated the corporates that you had been working for in that part of your career. Yeah, you started at Procter & Gamble, you worked for Johnson & Johnson, you worked for Galderma. And maybe Galderma was already the first one that may have been slightly different in that regard. Some people hear about those differences between big corporates like P&G and private equity. Others know it because they've been working in it, like you. So if you distill the essence of your experience, how does good leadership in private equity differ from good leadership in other companies?
So the first thing I'd say is that the good leadership is good leadership. Good leadership was good leadership 500 years ago. Good leadership is good leadership today. Good leadership in a privately held company is good leadership, same as in a publicly traded company. The key difference I do see between sort of publicly listed, maybe family-owned companies and a private equity-owned company is the importance of speed. And the speed in value creation, and again, I would preface this a little bit. I prefer to work for private equity companies that are growth-oriented and not cost-cutting-oriented. So this is really applies to sort of those growth-oriented PE companies, which most PE companies these days are. But in a sort of time horizon of 3 to 7 years, you really have to kind of deliver value creation with speed. Now, the enabler here is that there are less politics, right? So the big corporates tend to have a little bit more committees and a little bit more hierarchy in there. So that's an enabler, but speed is key. You don't have too much time. And the second difference I would say, and this is interesting that I'm discovering this now, is there are actually more resources available to somebody that works for a private equity held company, simply because people understand that it has to be done fast, and most PE companies actually offer that in their operating partner, in their strategic partner, or in their stakeholder network.
That's amazing. The first one, I expected. The second one is indeed an interesting new insight, a new perspective on this. Let's take them one by one. Let's talk speed first. There are different ways how you can induce speed. You can just shout at people and make the same people run faster. You can give them faster shoes to run. You can take stuff out of the way. So what are the specific ways you learned in your private equity assignments so far, Walter? And you're a chairman, you're a CEO, so you're in top management roles in this environment. What are the most effective ways to increase speed?
The best, the key learning that I have is that because you have a limited time frame, and because everybody agrees on that limited time frame, and because everybody is almost aligned on the objectives, right? So don't forget, in a private equity environment, the objectives are aligned between management, between the board, and between the owners of the company, because all have the same value creation or the same long-term incentive program, right? So it is very, it's almost simple, because the management has to buy into to the company. They own a part of the company. The board owns a part of the company. And of course, the shareholder is there. And because that it's very clear what that metric and what those KPIs are, then it's very easy to align on what needs to be achieved. Because of that clarity, which is easier to achieve at that context, and the fact that this has to be achieved in a shorter period of time, I think there is probably an incentive to stop overthinking and take decisions maybe faster than a publicly listed or maybe family-owned company would do.
Yeah, very good. So speed via clarity, clarity via goal alignment, and incentives to stop overthinking. I love it. It reminds me of many moments when that mindset might have helped. The second one, and I've never thought about it this way until you just said it, Walter, is in a way you have more resources available in private equity. Why is that? I mean, you and I worked in P&G, a company with 108,000 employees. It's a bit surprising. Why is your perception that in a way you have more resources in a private equity environment?
Many times when you are in a publicly listed or a larger company, you think you either have to come up with the ideas yourself, or there is enough time to come up with the answers yourself, or there are so many smart people in that company that you actually think that it can be done. And most of the time, it can be done. In a sort of constrained environment, which most private equity companies are, either time or people or capability, and mostly all three, it becomes very important that you basically do not, you essentially don't care where the good idea comes from. And you faster turn, you're encouraged actually to turn and want to turn to the outside world. And that could really speed things up.
Yeah. Great. Let's talk about people. Let's talk about leaders. There is an assumption, there is a statement, maybe it's a fact, that some kind of leader tends to thrive more in corporate environments. And others tend to thrive more in private equity environments. Or maybe this is completely wrong. As a matter of fact, you are proof of the opposite. You've been very successful in a big corporate environment, and you are very successful in a PE environment. Maybe it's the question needs to be more about the behavior. But let's start on the people first, because I still hear we work for private equity clients, private equity companies who and funds who buy companies and sell companies at a later point in time, hopefully for a multiple. The impression I have is the thinking goes some work well in private equity, some less. Based on your experience in both worlds now, Walter, how would you describe this? Is it true or false that some leaders work better in PE environments than others?
So first of all, I hope that good leaders can work in both environments because there are more privately held companies than there are publicly traded companies, right? So we need good leadership in the private world, right? Number two is, I think that I have seen so many of my colleagues and so many of the people, the leaders that I admire around me do both, right? And actually go from one world to the other and back. So I think actually too few people try it. And many of the people that I have seen have succeeded beautifully, right? Because the minute you are a proven leader in one environment, I think, of course, it's never 100%, but there's a high chance that the principles can be transferred to the other world.
Yeah. Great. You are appointing senior leaders, Walter. You are influencing who becomes a CEO and who doesn't in your chairman roles, in your advisory roles. How do you recognize leadership talent in a person?
The first thing I look for, and I go very much with the advice of Warren Buffett on this, is that you look for three things: intelligence, energy, and integrity, with integrity being the most important. And because integrity is the guarantor that this person will build value over time in a sustainable way. But from a content standpoint, as when I interview people, I always want to have proof of three things: inspirational leadership in their past, strong operational leadership in their past, and an ability to build a franchise or a brand or a product.
Yeah. Two personal questions, Walter. Now, about you as a human, do you still recall who you wanted to become when you were a little boy?
That's a good question. I mean, very early, I definitely wanted to become an astronaut, but that was not. But I didn't have sort of this aspirational goal. Don't recall.
Yeah. But the astronaut is a candidate, potential candidate. And recently, I attended and contributed to a global conference, a global alumni conference, where you also initially considered to come. I had the opportunity to talk with about, 500 people in the room. And I asked the question, who here in the room has ever made a decision way too late, although it was clear earlier? And in fact, all 500 hands or even pairs of hands went up. If you go back through your rich career so far, Walter, have you also had moments when you felt like, I should have taken that decision sooner?
So first of all, I cannot go against what those 500 great leaders said at the conference, but I offer a slightly sort of nuanced point of view, right? One is that on people decisions, I 1,000% agree that, you take them faster than later. And so sooner than later. And I think this is very important, particularly when you come in new into an organization. And I mean it also in the way when you want to swing behind somebody, do it. Don't wait. Don't procrastinate. Don't think in between. On the second thing though, on strategy and on sort of an action plan, I've had situations when I was jumping too fast into a course of action, and I should have maybe taken a little bit more time to assess the situation. Make sure that I fully understand, the stakeholders, the customers, competition in that new situation. I had the opportunity to change jobs very frequently in my career. And there were instances where maybe I waiting half a year longer would have potentially led to a better decision.
Yeah, very interesting view. That sometimes you should wait a bit or invest a bit more time than deciding too fast. Very interesting. Let's change, or let's maybe even come back. I think it's related to the topic of speed you alluded to when we talked about PE and corporate. When my father was still around, the industrialization took about three generations from start to finish. In my life, a digitalization, it's not completed yet, but it's omnipresent now, took about one generation. While the AIification will take 10 years. So in a way, I think change is the only constant in mankind's history. And still, one thing is changing in my perception. That's the pace of change. The pace is accelerating. If this is somewhat true, and if you experience it similarly, but maybe you perceive it slightly differently, if it's true that the world is changing faster than ever before, where do you see the biggest challenges for successful leadership today and tomorrow?
I think that, of course, everything is changing much faster. The VUCA world, AI, new generation, so many geopolitical situations in the geopolitical world that are changing very fast. But I think the true leadership and the principle of good leadership don't change. And I think one of the things that I would say is that if we think that diversity is a good thing, we should not throw it out because, I don't know, a current administration thinks it's not, or a political spectrum thinks it's not. If we believe that a diverse leadership team makes better decisions, and we know that, we should stick to it. If we believe that ESG, the governments, for instance, in ESG, is a wonderful thing because organizations that are well-governed are actually organizations that perform better, and it's easier for the employees to work in them, then even if the political environment or some people believe that it's not important anymore, I think we should stick to it. So I understand that there is a lot of change, change is accelerating, but the classics of good leadership, some of them are really, we should try to maintain them and not go with the wind and with the trend too often.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I completely agree. Yeah. Dealing with uncertainty. I still vividly remember May, June 2019. You and your wonderful wife, Ingrid, were kind enough to invite us to Moscow. For me, it was a comeback because I had been. For my family, it was the first time. And one thing I would like to highlight is this was about half a year, three quarters of a year before the COVID pandemic hit the world. You ran a huge amount of countries based in Moscow when COVID hit. Do you still remember the time that COVID became a problem and your organization at the time, thousands of people that you were running, suddenly became aware of, oops, there is COVID? What happened and what did you do in that moment?
So with a twist of fate, Stefan, when COVID hit, I already had my new job with Galderma.
I completely
understand the question. I basically started my new job with Galderma in 2020, right? After EQT got the majority stake of Galderma, buying it out of Nestle Skin Health. And I just started sort of as the new management team. We had the task of course, taking the company out of Big Nestle, creating a value creation plan, and then making sure that, you know, the company would develop well. The challenge was that I started in January and COVID hit in March. So right. I just had saw two countries. One was the US team, and I saw, I think I went to Dubai and saw the successful Middle Eastern team and the German team. And then I got stuck. I was stuck home for, you know, a year or so. I first of all would say it's not the ideal environment for somebody that starts in a private equity environment. So I would not recommend to replicate that. But on the other hand, what it helped is it really helped focus, right? Because you could only focus on the big things. You could only focus on the big brands. You could only focus on the big tasks. You could only focus on the big countries and the big levers, right? And our company had the issue that in some of our businesses, the aesthetic clinics were closed. So there was less business, but we were fortunate in the consumer division that we had the pharmacies and the retailers still open. And we actually managed beautifully, but it was a lesson of simplicity and focus.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. You're right. This was already Galderma time. Still, the challenge was the same, just in a different environment. And it's thanks for sharing what you've done and how you've done it. Another topic is self-leadership. I don't know how you experience it, but some leaders would tend to agree with the following statement. The higher up you get in your career, the less feedback you receive. And in some environments, they would even add, and the less honest feedback you receive, because people are just a little bit concerned about the power of your role. So it's the way you develop yourself has to change and has to adopt over time. So would you mind sharing with the people on this podcast here, how do you develop yourself as a leader?
So first of all, you're right. It is lonely at the top, right? And you need to be very clear that, you know, you will hardly ever receive the constructive feedback that you need to get. The way to develop yourself, I think, is the recipe is very simple. I mean, you have to stay curious. So I'm in my current job. Lean management is a good idea, and I'm reading a book actually. I'm listening to an audiobook actually on lean management because I'm not as current on it, but it's interesting and it will help us. I think the second thing is I have the great fortune to have lots of friends that are highly successful leaders. And, making sure that you stay in contact with them, you discuss things with them, you exchange, right? That also helps, and people that kind of help you stay grounded. And last but not least, I think that in this world, I think the wonderful thing of podcasts, whenever you take a run or when you take a long drive or a long flight or something like this, there's some outstanding perspectives that, you know, can be listened to. That helps also in the self-development.
Yeah, cool. Curiosity, exchange, and podcasts. I'm delighted that podcast is one of them because that's made it easier to attract you to be on the show today. Thank you, Walter. Now, there is a section I would also like to run with you. We are doing this in every interview. It's the quick questions section. Let's just take it away. Number one. What is the best advice you have ever received?
Take the road less traveled. When I was early at P&G, I had the opportunity to go to Indonesia, which is a emerging market. And that was definitely the best advice I got and the best career choice I've taken because I learned so much there, which I could have never learned in a developed market. I learned about Asia. I learned about managing crisis, which really helped me for the rest of my career.
Terrific. Next one. What quality do you value most in leaders?
I've said it before, integrity.
Next one. What is your personal go-to tool when things get stressful?
It's physical outdoor activity. So ideally in the mountains, right? Because as I always say, when you're standing on the ski slope, and it's very steep. There's nothing else you can think about.
So outdoor activity, terrific. What book, podcast, or quote has impressed you recently?
I read recently the Nexus and Sapiens from the author Yuval Noah Harari, like an Israeli author. And what really impressed me was the way he was explaining the development of humankind and this cognitive revolution, i.e. that we create. One of the reasons why the human species is so successful is because we can create not only the real world, but also an imaginative world. And I think that applying that thinking to leadership, there is something in it. Right?
Cool.
Highly recommend.
Sounds exciting. I'm going to buy that right afterwards. Thanks for sharing that. And then finally, if you could change one thing about the world of work tomorrow, what would it be?
It's just getting rid of sort of the bureaucratic tasks in management, right? So, I mean, think about the way we deal with expenses, right? In the past, how difficult it was to take a picture and send it to AI, and the rest is done automatically, right? So I think if we can just take care of more of the mundane administrative tasks in leadership and management so that we can focus more on the human interactions and the bigger problems.
Yeah, thank you. And before we come to closure, maybe one more spontaneous on that AI note, Walter. In my recent holiday, I read a couple of interesting books. One of them is the first biography about Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI. When you think about AI and your roles in the company you run, in the company where you are, where you chair the board, what do you see is the right attitude to AI? And what role do you think it will play a few years down the road?
The right attitude is complete openness, because it is not going to go away. And the second attitude, I think, is how to make it useful.
Yeah. Do your companies already experiment with AI?
Yes, but not enough.
Then welcome to the club. A study from BCG about 8 months ago said at that time, just 4% of global companies had already found a repeatable recipe for turning AI into value. And then what about 85 or 90% of the rest were experimenting? And then just the other week, I read a research from MIT 2 weeks ago saying it's now 5% and 90%, 5% that found significant value and 90% are experimenting. And I love what you say. All we need is openness and curiosity. Walter, thank you so much. This Lightwolf podcast and this episode reaches thousands of people across all 5 continents. Is there a question or is there a message that you would like to share with all these leaders on our call today?
I think to summarize a little bit our podcast is good leadership is essential for humankind, actually. Please stay and continue to stay as students of leadership, because student leadership is learned and not inherited or given as a gene or so at birth. And number three is what I believe good leaders do, which is a cool head, keep a cool head, have a warm heart, and roll up your sleeves. Thank you very much, Stefan.
Thank you very much, dear Walter. A huge pleasure. A wonderful way of summing it up. Some tremendous insights, some wonderful nuggets of experience. It was a huge pleasure. And in the name of the thousands of people on the call, thank you very much, dear Walter Geiger.